This is the Wealth and Law Podcast, a podcast about the intersection of personal wealth and the legal landscape. We'll take a deep dive into relevant topics. We'll basically teach you what we know, and we'll engage with guests with deep expertise in their field. We hope that you'll enjoy this episode and many more episodes. So please join us on this journey as we try to bring you relevant information that is both timely and important for you to know in order to engage in this area of the world. Welcome to the Wealth and Law Podcast. I am Brent Nelson, and you know, it's a fun world that we live in if you do any sort of tax planning and also interact with the general public, because the let's say the divide between the knowledge of tax planning professionals and the knowledge of the general consumer is one that is infrequently bridged effectively. There's a lot of misinformation is what I'm trying to say. And a lot of consumers think that the misinformation is the good information. So to sort of sort these sorts of things out, you have to talk to somebody like Allison McBride. Thank you, Allison.
Oh, it's Allison McLeod. But I like
McLeod. Oh, my goodness.
You should leave that in.
Allison McLeod. This is great. This is going to be an excellent episode. I'm obviously very on top of this topic, without question.
You're fine. You're
well,
fine.
For the few people
for
in the world,
all
Allison,
three people who, listening, my last
for
name
all
is
three
McLeod.
People for all three people in the world listening, to give us at least your high level CV here.
Yeah, for sure. So I have been a tax professional of some sort for about 20 years. I've worked with large publicly traded companies. I've worked with small, tiny startups. I've worked with solopreneurs, nonprofits, you name it. I feel like I've been pretty much everywhere. My bread and butter these days is working with law firms for tax accounting and wealth management. I've had a few different iterations of my own firm. This one is fairly recent and it's been very fun. And that's where I am today.
So what does that mean, working with law firms for tax planning and wealth management?
For sure. So our focus is on helping firms not only grow the top line, but also grow the bottom line, and then invest, preserve, have something to retire on.
If lawyers retire, it begins with actually trying, I would say.
Yeah, accountants are not known for that either.
No, lawyers and accountants are very terrible at retiring.
Indeed.
I have plenty of lawyer friends who quote unquote retired, but they're still working. So I'm not sure how that all works, but that's what they've done. And I tell them to their faces, you are terrible at retirement. And they're like, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I set us up here to talk about our friends, the consumers, and the tax planning info sphere. But why do you think there's such a lack of knowledge on the or lack of ability to sort through good versus bad information for consumers?
It's a variety of reasons. One, tax is really hard. Every time Congress meets, they make it harder. You know this really, really well. If you ever hear someone in Congress say they're about to simplify tax law, rest assured the opposite is going to happen. Our lives are already complex. Everything, you know, it just to get by every day is hard. So this is just one area that's hard. Two, it's expensive. It's, you know, for most of my clients anyway, taxes are going to be their largest lifetime expense. So when they might not think about it that much, but when they do think about it, they're highly incentivized to bring that number down, right? So that's already in their minds. I think another reason is that with anything that is expensive and complicated, there's room for folks to make a lot of money. And social media is a great place for people who are maybe good at messaging and good at marketing and good at sales. And maybe not even just social media. There's other avenues too. But I think particularly of social media as the place where folks who have less than good intentions end up and say, hey, you know, this expensive, scary thing, we can help you with that. And they're not necessarily looking to serve. They're looking to sell a product, sell a quote unquote solution. So I think that's another reason that you see that. And I think even another reason that it's so easy to fall for tax scams or end up in tax gray areas that you as a consumer didn't really realize that's what was going on is because folks like Allison and Brent, who are so busy taking care of our tax and estate planning or whoever clients, we don't have time to go out and fight all this bad information. So you don't see tons and tons of podcasts or blog posts or YouTube channels that are just fighting bad information. There are some, and certainly we know those people, but we kind of live, you and I live in this little bubble where we see much of that fighting going on, but that's not mainstream. These are just the peers that we've chosen to hang out with. So there's quite a few reasons, and I guess I'll add even another reason. You know, we all want to eat cookies and stay in shape, right? We want to be able to lose unwanted pounds and eat all the cake we want, right? And so a lot of the messaging that comes across is messaging from these sort of negative finfluencers, I will call them, is, you know, you can eat cookies. You can totally eat cookies. Your CPA, your EA, your attorney, whoever, the IRS, they just don't want to tell you about the cookies. They just don't know about the cookies. But you can eat the cookies and you can lose the weight. And you and I are over here saying, you probably should have broccoli. And broccoli isn't very sexy. Broccoli isn't very compelling. Cookies are very, very compelling. And so, it's just a lot of different reasons. But those are some of the few that I can think of where it just is like so obvious that, of course, consumers go out to the quote unquote tax marketplace to shop around for advice. And they're bombarded with these messages that are just totally wrong. But of course, they don't know any better. And so it sounds reasonable or good or attractive. And so they're like, oh, yeah, sure. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And I think I agree with all of that, by the way. No big surprise there, I'm sure. But I think some of it is also confusion about who actually is authoritative and who is not on any given topic. And so one of the things that I'll hear, it doesn't have to be CPAs, it could be lawyers too, but it'll be somebody will say something to me and say, well, you can do this because I saw, you know, a video on Instagram and it said you could do that. And I might respond, don't do that. That's a very bad idea. I don't think you can actually do that. And actually it might be a fraud. So definitely don't. And now that I've told you, it's definitely a fraud if you do it. Say, no. This person, they have this channel. They're a CPA. Well, being a CPA like means nothing. It's just like saying, well, they're a lawyer. Who cares if they're a lawyer? If they don't know what they're talking about, they don't know what they're talking about. Just having the credential doesn't mean they know what they're talking about. You know, I have some sympathy that for a normal consumer, it's very difficult for them to figure out who knows what they're talking about, who doesn't know.
Agreed. We as a culture, as a society, are just so busy and so bombarded that what gets our attention is what's loudest, you know? And what we pay attention to is whatever is most compelling. And it's unfortunate that consumers cannot trust the letters behind somebody's name, ESQ, CPA, CFP, whatever. You think that we would be able to do that. And indeed, those letters are part of rules and systems designed specifically to protect consumers. And yet they can't. And so what happens is the CPA or the attorney or whoever who has the most followers on YouTube or the most compelling message on TikTok or whatever it is, those people will rise above whatever other good messages might be out there. Whether somebody has those letters or not, but it is, you think, yeah, okay, well, I'm a consumer and I'm going to be doing a little bit more due diligence than the average person because I'm smarter than the average person. They're an attorney. They know what they're talking about. We're good, you know, but really, they just have pretty pictures. They just have really nice marketing, right? They just have really good production value, mm-hmm. right? And then they just have those three letters. And it's very, very confusing for consumers. It's confusing Absolutely. For me. You know, I was telling you before we started recording, I saw a fellow CPA put some information out there about taxes that I just did not think was right at all. And I had to ask some peers like, hey, not to throw stones, but like, is this right? Or what's going on? They're like, no, that's not right. You know, so it's even confusing for us. But I think, again, I was being a little bit fooled myself by a very nicely packaged message.
Yes. Nicely packaged messages are the thing. Well, nicely packaged. And that's I think that's a really interesting way to think about it, because I kind of think about it that way. Well, it's not interesting because I think of it that way, but I think that's a good imagery, because oftentimes what I see is there's some idea and it's wrapped in two things that are somewhat polar opposites. One is some outcome that alleviates a pain point. Obviously alleviates, if you get that outcome, it would obviously alleviate a pain point. Like, you get to save a bunch on taxes, right? You're going to optimize your tax planning or whatever you want to call it. And then on the other side, in order to get you there, using some concepts that are rarely fully explained, but usually not well understood. So since I could see how you, the consumer, I don't really understand what that is and how it works. And here's somebody who seems to know what they're talking about saying, oh, this thing that you don't understand, you don't know how it works. Actually, it works to get you this outcome. You don't need to worry about the details. I'm the details guy. You don't worry about that. Here's the outcome that you're going to get. And they have no way to question whether you actually get that, because they can't even understand the vehicle that's being presented to them, let alone whether the outcome is correct.
Right. And so then, you know, if you saw something like that, you know, just by and of itself, like a nice message, you might start to question it. You might start to say to yourself, well, I have a tax advisor already. I wonder why they haven't mentioned this to me. You know, or, well, I've been doing the opposite for a long time and it seems to have been working okay. Should I be doing this or whatever? Like, and these negative influencers, they already know that you're going to think that, right? And so their next portion of their pitch is, your CPA doesn't want you to know. Your CPA doesn't know. This is some tax strategy that we are so smart, we just figured out how it works, right? And so they're like kind of already addressing your objections as a consumer even before you really can even voice them. So now you don't think, huh, well, I wonder if I should ask my CPA about this. Instead, you've already moved on to, oh, they haven't told me because they don't know. I need to go pay this guy $10,000 over here to set up the strategy for me because he knows what he's doing. Let me go take care of that. I'll get the strategy in place. Oh, and then maybe I'll bring it back to my CPA to fill out some tax forms for, right?
Right. And to illustrate how powerful that messaging is, I'm going to cloak the identity a little bit here just for anonymity purposes, but a very, very close person to me once told me, Brent, I understand. Why don't you ever give me good tax advice? Why don't you ever tell me how to save on my taxes? And I said to this person, well, how do you make your money? Well, I get paid by my company. I said, it's all W-2 income. See. Yeah. I was like, sorry, there's very little that you can do. Sorry, I'm not hiding the ball here. This is just reality. There's very little that you, drawing your salary from your company on your W-2 income, aside from, you know, doing your elected deferrals and contributing to your 401k, et cetera, there's very little that you can do to reduce your tax bill. And that person was convinced still, even though I said that very directly to their eyeballs, that I was holding back. Yeah. That's how powerful. This is somebody very close, like very, very personally close to me. And that's how powerful that messaging is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes consumers especially don't always know how to interpret even helpful and accurate messages. I had a client email me just this morning saying, hey, I just found out that the 529 plan I've been contributing to, I can't get a tax deduction for, but if it was an in-state plan, I would get a tax deduction for it. And how has no one ever told me this? And I'm like, well, we've actually talked about this before. But, you know, I'm like, okay, so when you actually boil down the deduction times the tax rate, we're talking a couple $100 a year. This is your big savings, right, that you've been quote unquote missing out on, right? And is it worth moving your plan from one place to another? Is that, you know, are you dissatisfied with the investments, What's going on here? But really, what they heard was, you're missing out on tax dollars. That was the messaging, I am sure, that they heard, right? And so they bring it to me already kind of accusatory. Why haven't you told me about this? When really, we did talk about it. There's really not a lot here to do. And you don't care. And the response back is going to be, okay, yeah, I don't care about a couple $100 a year. Thanks. Right?
Right.
But the messaging is, it is really powerful. And it is, I think it gets harder and harder. The conclusion I've come to, Brent, is that these social media influencers have created a market only they can serve. They have fed these lies of, and it's not just taxes. It can be insurance. It can be investments. It can be legal matters. Anything in that sort of financial legal sphere that's extremely complicated and extremely just so painful for people to think through oftentimes. Like, any kind of messaging around that says you can have cookies all day and not gain weight, when they come to people like you and me, like if they have that mindset already and we tell them, no, I mean, you really do have to eat a well-balanced diet. You really do have to go to the gym. They're like, ugh, you're withholding from me. You're not telling me all the tips and the tricks, right? And we can't serve that mindset. And the sad part is, neither can these negative influencers. They can't serve that either. They're just selling them something. For me, it's like sort of like the analogy that I have in my head is an 8-story elevator. And so you turn on YouTube and someone's selling you this 8-story elevator and you're like, my CPA, why didn't they tell me about this 8-story elevator? Dude, you got a 2-story house. But look, if you want somebody to sell you an 8-story elevator and see if they can come and assemble it and install it and it works great for you, like, yeah, more power to you, right? But it's, you know, of course I didn't tell you about the 8-story elevator. Of course I didn't. It's not suitable for you. I'm not here to sell you a product. I'm not here to sell you an elevator. I'm here to take care of you. So I'm not going to push something on you you don't need for the low, low price of $20,000 or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah, it's that. And then also explain to them also that 8-story elevator, it doesn't go up.
Right.
So you can get on and off it all you want.
Button. You can get inside and push a button, but good luck getting somebody to help you fix it. And when the city ordinance guy comes by and is like, why do you have an 8-story elevator in your yard? The folks that sold it to you are not going to come around to help you.
No, definitely not. I get a fair number of questions about a lot of the trust structures out there, deferred sales trusts, super secret, asset protected, discretionary, amazing business trusts and things of that nature. And people will ask me about them and I will explain to them, no, I don't think that works. Well, why not? Because I, you know, so-and-so told me this, or this group is selling it to me and they say it's totally legal and they're like real genuine trusts. And I just tell them, I said, look, the IRS doesn't care what you do. They actually don't care. They really don't. You can set up every structure that your brain or anybody else can conceive of. And in fact, it probably would be perfectly legal. Where the IRS really cares is when you want to try to take a tax advantage off of that structure. Because in essence, what you're doing is you're reaching into the federal treasury's coffers and taking money out. And they really, really care about that. So just imagine that's what the IRS really, really cares about. So if I'm telling you that this thing does not work and it doesn't fit within the tax rules, what do you think the IRS is going to care about? Are they going to care that it's valid and legal and properly set up in Nevada or wherever, or are they going to care that you're claiming it on your tax return? And they will fight and protect the money you're trying to pull out of the federal treasury with criminal penalties if needed. Like that's it. And even when I explain it like that to people, they still don't believe me.
Your messaging is not compelling enough.
Criminal penalties is not compelling enough.
Well, here's why your messaging is not compelling enough too. So. And this goes back to your original question of like, why are people, consumers, being so bamboozled by all these poor messages? It's, you know, it goes back to the IRS and I guess this is the part you kind of get into politics, but if there's not consistent and public enforcement, you know, throwing a celebrity in tax jail every 10 years is not very clear, right? But
yes.
I would, my first thing would be like, can we make taxes simpler? If taxes were simpler, a lot of this would go away because there would be less opportunity for bad actors to make money off of simple things, right? Again, they're here because it's so complex. There is room for misunderstanding. There is room for them to sell something that doesn't work. But apart from making taxes simpler, we have to enforce the systems that we have, and we don't. Very few taxpayers get examined. And so it's not from a consumer's perspective, some people do live in fear of the IRS. And some folks want to like purposely frustrate public policy and do whatever they want to on their tax returns. I don't like either of those views. I wish we all just had really simple rules and we could just follow them and no one was scared of the IRS, but people just, you know, were honest with their tax treatments. But that's not really where we are. And I think with the IRS not enforcing, not going after businesses, trusts, et cetera, then it's so easy for this messaging to be out there. If more and more taxpayers were examined, then, because it's not just only social media, right? It's also, I talk to my friends, I talk to my colleagues, I talk to my peers, and their CPA lets them do this. Their EA told them it was okay to do this, right? But if the message starts getting around, oh, well, my colleagues are starting to get IRS exams left and right, and they're like cutting down on auto. They're cutting down on meals. They're cutting down on, you know, this, that, and the other. It's much harder for these misinformation messages to be pushed because there's actual feedback inside that system, right? Then that doesn't exist right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. You take as an example the microcaptive industry. Which was, you know, you might remember a very big deal, especially towards the turn of the century. I have clients who have these things in their files. I had nothing to do with them, but they have them, and I really hope they don't get examined someday. And for some of them, they've been under the radar and they have not been examined, even though what they did was what people have gotten hammered for. And I know other people personally who have been involved very publicly in those sorts of IRS enforcement cases and got their fingers burnt very badly in those micro captive transactions. And I think you're right, because you have that and you can point to that. Now that industry is kind of fizzed out and it's morphed into something else. There's always something else, but it's sort of morphed into something else.
Yeah.
And like the, you know, it's not the hot button issue anymore, because you have these actual public cases to point to say, hey, you can't do this because the IRS is very wise to it. Also, they're winning in court and people are paying big money as a result. So what do you think is the answer? What do we do for the yous and the ayes about this sort of messaging and how to combat it?
You know, I feel like that's really tough, because as professionals who got where we are by educating ourselves, I think sometimes we fall on, well, we just need to educate our clients more. And I think there is something to that. I don't know that that's the cure-all, because it's such a big misinformation, big bucket of misinformation that we're trying to fight. I think there is something to be said for that, though. And for those of us who are in a position to do it, maybe it's TikTok videos. We have at least one wonderful colleague who has tax misinformation fighting TikTok videos, Laura Lynn. We know folks that have lots of great blog posts. They're on Twitter. They're on LinkedIn. They're posting, no, you can't do this, and here's why. This breaks down. Your podcast is a great example of this. I've tried to do it many times over the years with various blog posts, newsletters. It's something, if we do want to tackle with education, we do have to do one to many, and we do have to go where the consumer is, right? And a lot of times who our clients are and who the consumer is are not the same, right? For you and for me, our clients are fairly affluent, right? they don't necessarily represent the average consumer who turns on YouTube and says, you need an LLC and an S Corp, and I can do that for the low, low price of $5,000. And they think something magical will happen and fork over some money to somebody that gives them something that they don't need, or could be done more cheaply, or maybe too soon, or something like that. So I think education does have a role, but I think it's something that has to be one-to-many. We can't fight this one-on-one. It's just too overwhelming, especially in the accounting tax space. We're just so busy trying to have one-on-one conversations with an uncompelling message to a client that has been bombarded with social media and other sources of misinformation. It's just too, it's not sustainable for us as practitioners one-on-one. And I think it's hard too, even in a one-to-many setting, unless you want to just sort of make a career out of being a influencer yourself. And I've certainly seen this with colleagues and friends, and which is wonderful, more power to them. But then it's very hard to maintain being a, you know, a practitioner when you do that, because, you know, the social media, or, you know, that being an influencer kind of is just all consuming as far as a profession itself goes, or a job itself goes. So I think education is part of it. I think it's got to be more enforcement. It has to be enforcement, because that peer-to-peer messaging, and I have a lot to say about peer-to-peer messaging, actually, so hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit. But I think that is so powerful, that because, well, before there was social media, right, there was, oh, well, you know, my friend's CPA says blah, 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 right? There was always this tax misinformation via word of mouth. So the only thing to really combat that is enforcement, right? Education. Yeah. To some extent, enforcement, definitely. And the third thing, really, and I mean, I say this, I feel like I say this all the time, but please, Congress, stop making tax harder. Like, ideally, Brent, you and I would not have a job. Taxes are that, just would be that simple, and we would not have jobs. That is how simple I would like taxes to be. You know, first we make criminals, then we punish them, right? We as a culture, as a society, our government, we create systems of just encouraging this sort of behavior where folks are trying to beat the system because the system is expensive and confusing, and it feels like you're the consumer being manipulated. And then, so of course, all these folks with bad intentions are going to try to make a profit off of that. Why would they not, right? But if you make it so simple and clear that none of that ecosystem can exist, there you go. Okay. I said my piece.
I'm like you. I pine for the day when it's easy and simple. It will make my life a lot easier. There's plenty that is already hard and complicated that has nothing to do with tax.
Right.
That we have to do for our clients, right? There's plenty of, listen, human beings themselves are plenty complicated. There's never going to be an end of complexity to then layer on these tax rules that almost mirror and then amplify that complexity is kind of inefficient and ridiculous from my perspective. But I also don't have a really high level of optimism that you and I are going to get our wish.
No.
That's the nicest way I can say that.
Yeah. I was at a conference the other day, and one of the speakers who's and I've been doing this a while, but I think he's probably been doing it twice as long as I have. And he said, you know, in all my years, Congress has never simplified tax law. Do you think they're going to start anytime soon? So my hope is that some combination of maybe, again, increased enforcement. But I do hate the idea of enforcement on top of complicated laws. But anyway, but some combination of increased enforcement and hopefully better systems like artificial intelligence, et cetera. I don't exactly know how all those will play in at this particular topic, but something just has to cut through the complexity that humans have made. A very few number of humans have made, and many millions of humans are struggling with.
Yeah, and it's a very complicated. I mean, to some level, the tax system is always going to have complexity to it, because we live in a country with an extremely dynamic and extremely complicated economy. And the tax system is trying to fit over the top of this extremely dynamic and extremely complicated economy, number one. And number two, I think anytime you have a system like this where, you know, we're really talking about how does the government dole out the money? It's not really all about revenue taxes. It's really about where does the money go? Because once the money comes in, then everybody with interests who thinks that they're the best thing for the economy or for the country thinks they should be incentivized. They shouldn't be treated the same as somebody else who doesn't bring as much value to the equation, right? Just like people in a large company, some of the people involved think they should get paid more because they bring more value to the company and more than the other person who brings less value. And then that same sort of dynamic plays out in these very weird public governmental ways in the tax code. So I think on some level, we'll always have that complexity, but it could be simplified substantially, even from where it is, and still be complex. I mean, it's like they don't write tax bills that are less than 1,000 pages anymore. I mean, they're always, the tax bills that have come out in the last 5 years have all been close to 1,000 pages, just the code that doesn't include all the regulations and the guidance. I mean, that alone tells you a lot about how complex and how moneyed the interests are that go into putting these things together right now.
Yeah. And then
it's very hard to fight against.
Yeah. It's an entrenched system. This is the way we've always done it. It's, you know, it's always horse trading with tax rules, right? And then if you're trying to reconcile back to some sort of budget, or you're trying to fit somebody's narrow specific interests or whatever, you're going to make these rules that may not make a lot of sense, right? Tax rules are not necessarily based on economic reality. To your point, they are trying to fit within our economy, but they're not necessarily always based on our economy. So no. A lot of right. It's again goes back to compelling messages. Who has the compelling message as the law is being written and passed? And so sometimes you have rules that don't make sense. They're counterintuitive. They just lend themselves to being abused. Maybe they're they don't work in concert with other rules already out there. It's so hard. I always tell people taxes are more like chemistry than algebra, right? You know, in algebra, 2 + 3 is going to always be 5, I think, at least as best I know. So 5 - 3 is always 2. But like in tax, like you put 2 and 3 together and who knows, you get 28. Like just because these rules are not based on logic, they're not based on rules of our reality. They're just whatever somebody was feeling like that day. And it just got written in and we're all supposed to do it. So another one of the many reasons taxes are very complicated.
So you mentioned peer-to-peer communication. And then I sort of got us down this tangent about tax policy, but did you have something else you wanted to talk about on peer-to-peer communication, or maybe flesh that out just a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not just that there's, like I was saying earlier, even before social media, there was messaging out there of, well, hey, my buddy says his accountant lets him do blah, blah, blah. Why don't you? Or, you know, I'm in this networking group and I have people that are in my industry and they're doing blah, blah, blah. Or maybe especially if they're not in my industry, like they're doing these things. What's going on? And so people hear messages, again, taxes are complicated and they're expensive. So they're very interested, but they don't know. So I wanted to kind of just talk through some of the things that I see happening when you're talking with your peer. So this may be a little bit more of a consumer segment here. But one of the things that I hear is like when folks say, I make a lot of money, but I don't pay taxes. That, right? Like, well, my buddy seems to make a lot of money and not pay taxes. So I want to try to break that down and explain what might be going on. So one of the things is that when someone says they make a lot of money, what is a lot of money to them? And Brent, you've probably seen this over the years. I've definitely seen this with working with numerous, you know, business owners. To someone, $100,000 is a lot of money. To some people, $10 million is not even a drop in the bucket. So when you hear, well, I make a lot of money, but I don't pay taxes, ask them for dollar amounts. What is a lot of money to you? The other thing is, what does I don't pay taxes mean? So a lot of people, I would say the vast majority of Americans, think that if they get a refund, when they file their tax returns in April, they didn't pay any tax. That is 100% not the case. That it could be, I guess, but it's not a one-to-one relationship, right? What it means is you had withholding during the year. You may have made estimated tax payments during the year, and the sum of those exceeded your tax liability, and now you're overpaid. And if you want that as a refund, you can have it. But a lot of people think they get a refund and it meant they don't pay taxes. So when someone says, I make a lot of money and I don't pay taxes, they really may mean, like, I don't pay additional taxes when I file my tax return because I've been sufficiently withheld and or I made estimated tax payments along the way to cover my prior year tax liability. That might actually be what they mean. Right. I think a lot of times people confuse income and wealth. So they'll say, well, I make a lot of money. Well, really, they got divorced, got a big settlement, and they're sitting on a pile of cash. They kind of made a lot of money all at once. But really, you know, it's just sitting in a bank account right now. It's not earning a lot of interest. They haven't invested it yet. Of course, you're not paying any tax, right? I think a lot of times, too, folks are doing things that are unsustainable from a tax strategy perspective. I don't mean bad. I don't mean wrong. I don't mean fraudulent. I'm not talking about the negative influencers. But I mean things like they 179 a piece of equipment or a car they use 100% in their business, right? Like, they can do that only so long, right? Some of the things people say, well, I made a lot of money, but I don't pay taxes. Well, yeah, but you spent a lot of money, right, on these items that you got a 100% accelerated depreciation on. Are you going to buy a new piece of equipment every single year? No, you're not. Are you going to buy a new car for your business every single year? No, you're not. Sometimes folks defer income, kind of back to our discussion earlier about 1031 exchanges. I think that was outside of the show, so that might be a little confusing. But 1031 exchanges allow you to sell real estate under the right circumstances without having to pay tax right then on that. But you also have to defer receipt of the cash. So yeah, somebody might have made a lot of money on a sale, but they've got to put it right back into a new piece of property, right? So they're not getting the cash from that. They're putting it right into a new piece of property. So, like, again, can you do that every single year? I mean, at some point, you got to have money to live on, right? So I think some of that is happening. And I think, too, some people are just outright committing tax fraud. So that's more in line with the conversation we've had so far. So I make a lot of money and I don't pay taxes. When you hear people say that, just know sometimes people are legit committing tax fraud, and they may or may not know that. And then lastly, I would say sometimes people don't really know how much they make. So it's not just that you and they have different definitions of a lot of money. It might just be that they don't know. So although this is a lot of people, it would surprise a lot of people to know that this is a lot of people. Most folks, even business owners, are just opening up their bank account and going, oh yeah, I've got money here today. I'm doing great. And they look the next day and they're like, oh, there's not much money in there. Something must be wrong. They have no idea where money comes from, where it goes. They're not in touch with the ebbs and flows of their business cycle or their paycheck cycle or anything like that. It's just, if I have a lot of money in the bank today, everything's great. And if I don't, it's not. So again, don't, as a consumer, don't assume that your buddy, your peer, your colleague knows more about their financial situation than you do about yours. They might not. And when they say, I make a lot of money and I don't pay a lot of taxes, they might have no idea how much money they make, and they might not have any idea how much taxes they pay.
Good chance they do not fully comprehend all the taxes they pay, or how it's calculated, and what things they've done to make that happen, and what the ultimate effect of that could be. And I think one of the industries that is prevalent in that regard, you mentioned like 1031 exchanges, would be like the real estate industry, right? Well, mm-hmm. So I'll hear people say, well, I've got to get some rental units because I need to shelter some income. Well, right. That's, you know, that's great. First of all, that's not going to shelter your income. Other than maybe your rental income. And then they don't realize that, well, the reason that they get to shelter that income is because they're depreciating that asset. And that at some point in the future, they are going to pay tax on that depreciation. Like, you don't get it forever for free unless somehow you die with it, which is sort of a crappy way to plan unless you're 80. So, you know, when some 30 or 40 year old is telling you they're going to buy a bunch of rental units to save on taxes, I guess they mean they're going to hold it for 70 years until they die and then never sell it. But otherwise, at some point, you're going to pay some tax on it.
I see then, that messaging around. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I see that messaging. Hear that messaging similarly in for whole life insurance policies.
Yes.
Which are sold to so many. But most folks are not going to really need them. They're it's, what's that phrase? They are sold more than they are actually bought, right? So like, you know, but I've heard it, it's, oh, well, you get to shelter all this income because, you know, the investments inside the policy, they're earning interest, dividends, et cetera. You're not going to pay tax on that. And I'm looking at your 1040 going, my dude, you get a W-2 and that's it. You don't have big amounts of investments that are generating so much interest in dividends. You need that type of income sheltered.
Right. And on those policies, somewhat to my point of the packaging, right? It's wrapped in something that people don't understand. Well, the people selling those whole life policies oftentimes don't understand them. They're so complicated, first of all.
They don't.
Almost no one can ever produce for me the actual contract, which is shocking. And when you read the contract, oftentimes you see in there, oh, there's a lot of expenses here.
Yeah.
And people don't, and for some reason, people can't read the statements that they get on those insurance policies correctly to understand that that policy is in essence an account where you put the money in and they take a bunch of it out and then they pay you a little bit based off of some index, like a derivative, you know, it's like based off of some index. You're not actually invested in those investments, just like some index that they'll track. And then they're telling you, well, that index did X, so we're going to pay you X. And you're just trusting that they're right. You don't really know because if you don't own that index, you know, they're just paying, you know, it's like all this stuff that people don't understand about how it works and that all of those costs are like taxes, except you're paying it to an insurance company, not the government. So it's really hard
with those policies, and it's really hard too sometimes with suboptimal or even just bad tax advice, because it's sort of like there's these two roads and you go down the one road where you didn't do it and the road where you did. And if you could know that and you could see that delta, right? Like if someone is on a bad suboptimal path and I can point them in a good direction, that delta is like very obvious. And my value is very obvious. And the better road is very obvious. But once they're already down that road, it's like, how do you unwind and recreate the other road for them that they failed to take earlier? But if you could, and people could see that, I think it would be surprising. But it's hard for you and I to tell people this was not a good tax move. This was not a good investment move. This was not a good business move. This was whatever. When the complexity around that choice and the complexity around the situation they're now in is just so dense that even to your point, even the folks that are doing the selling can't even know.
No, they don't.
Often got nothing. Yeah.
They almost never can explain it. That's why they're salespeople. Well. All right, we could probably talk about this hours and not exhaust this well, but I know you have better things to do with your life than talk to me about that. Allison, if people are trying to reach out to you, connect with you, what's the easiest way for them to do that?
Probably to find our website, agatecpa.com, agatecpa.com.
Perfect. We'll put the links and the contact in the show notes too, so anybody looking for that, you can just look online or look in your Apple Podcast app and you should be able to find Allison there. Allison McLeod, not McBride. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and talent and expertise here.
Oh, it's awesome. It's great being on the show. Thank you so much, Brent.
You're welcome. Hey, listeners, thanks again for joining me on the podcast. It's fun to do it for you. If you're enjoying it, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to my blog at wealthandlaw.com and follow me on social media at wealthandlaw. I'll see you there.